Always forget that. We would have no...
like, an hour long or 45 right. minutes, and then we're just like, oh.
Oops. God. Sorry.
Sipping on Sondheim while belting up Bordeaux, sharing the best wine and picking the next show. Here Broadway guests end up acting like loons. This you can find here on Tennyson Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the fight dies, whether June's or moon, I simply turn to my favorite thing, and they are all Tennyson Tunes.
Welcome to Tennyson Tunes. I'm Jessica.
I'm Jimmy. Hi, friends. Hi, Mom.
Hi, friends. Hi, Moms. It has been an exciting time for Tennyson Tunes.
It's been so exciting.
We are here together again.
We're together again for the second time.
I'm in New York, which is really exciting. My class, I gave them the day off.
Professor Humphrey
gave the day off and said, go study for this upcoming test since you didn't do well in the last one.
Oh.
And so hopefully they're all off studying.
Oh, Professor Humphrey threw down the hammer.
I did.
She was like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. And everyone is like, no.
Yep, that's basically
yeah,
what
that
it was.
Hurts worse. Just yell at me.
Right. How was your week?
It was good. I went to Comic-Con. I went to New York Comic-Con.
That must have been
it was
amazing.
The best.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I got, like, tired real quick. Those things are, like, they're so much fun, but it's just, like, a lot of walking around and you're, you know. So yeah. I was just, like, at, like, noon. I was only there for 2 hours. I was like, I could go home now.
I was with friend of the show last night.
Friend of the show?
BD Wong.
Yay!
At his wedding.
Oh.
And it was so lovely and wonderful, and I was so happy to be back in town, especially for that.
So it's like a little comic convention of its own.
Honestly, it was like Broadway Con.
Yes.
And it was so much fun. But speaking of Broadway Con and Broadway stars, we have a star in our midst.
We have a star in our midst.
So remember back a couple months ago we were doing the Mannerizing the Mentors. So this is a special type of episode in Tannins and Tunes where we don't focus directly on pairing a wine with a Broadway show, but we pair a wine with a Broadway person and someone who has had a long career in musical theater. And these are people that have meant a lot to me and in my career and who I am as a person. And so it's me getting to have like a really cool conversation. We get to discuss careers in general instead of just focusing on one tiny little aspect of a career, which I think is really,
yeah,
really fun.
I think so.
So let's introduce our guest, Miss Charlotte D'Amboise.
Hi, you guys. Gosh, you guys are perky.
Yeah, for it being a dreary Monday,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know. It's like 1 o'clock and I still feel it's like 7. It's like in the morning.
I totally agree, yeah. Right? It's a day that you just want to sit at home and do nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, though I feel like when I have, I literally have 48 hours in New York, and so I'm just packing it full.
Oh,
again,
everything.
Again, you're in your own, like, Comic-Con. You're just like, yeah. I want to sit, but I have to be, like, there's so much I have to do right now.
Right?
Yeah.
It is really, really nuts. So, Charlotte, you and I have known each other since I was 16.
Oh, which is crazy.
My God,
that is crazy. And you look exactly the same.
Yeah.
You really do.
I know.
Oh, that God.
I'm not aged at all.
No.
And not only are you a star of stage and screen and have done so much in terms of being an actor, but I actually met you through Triple Arts, your summer intensive,
yes,
where you were teaching.
Yes, yes. I remember you well, Jessica, my little ballerina.
Right.
Was she like completely dressed as a ballerina and just had a tutu that just knocked everybody out?
No, but she was ready to put her pointe shoes on any second.
Yeah, definitely.
We're doing voice lessons right now.
Yeah, we're doing, you know, a chorus line. We don't need pointe shoes.
Like, I am ready. Well, let's go ahead and get into the wine before we get into your career, because this wine is pretty incredible. Jimmy, can you go ahead and pour for us?
Absolutely.
It's a screw top, so we don't have to, suffer through my pulling out of cork.
Me too, right?
Honestly, I think screw tops are the best invention in wine. Yes. Keeps everything fresher without destroying the environment. So
yeah.
I'm a big fan of that.
Do the cork destroy?
So its cork is actually going extinct.
Oh, wow.
And so a lot of companies are trying to figure out how they're going to use something other than cork in their bottles.
Why are they going extinct?
Just because the cork tree is being mined and farmed.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
So they're trying to come up with plastic, corks. The screw top is a good invention. Mm-hmm. And again, going to a lot of boxed and canned wine.
Mm-hmm. We have limited resources, people.
Yeah, limited resources, right? And so I think that we really will start seeing corks and bottles start to die out in the next few years.
That's sad, kind of.
Yeah, there is something
There's something about the ritual of opening it up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
definitely. There is something. It makes it difficult to get to the wine.
Yeah.
You got to work for it.
You got to work for it, right? The screw top is like, oh, yeah.
Okay, fine.
There we go.
If it's easy.
Except we're still happy to have it. Because none of us really want to work hard.
We'll take it. Just like your students.
Right. So this is a fantastic white wine. This is the El Coto de Rioja. So it is a Spanish white wine from the Rioja region, and it's made up of three different grapes. It's Viera, Verdejo, and Sauvignon Blanc. And this area has these hillsides and these mountains, and this vineyard is up on the mountain in, like, the highest elevation that you can. And I'm so sorry. This is Argentinian, by the way. I don't know why I said Spanish. That was wrong.
Uh-oh. Those kids are going to get you.
I know. Hold on one second. Spain. I was right. Okay. My brain is playing tricks on me. Wait. I'll just cut that out. It'll be great. No one will ever know. Okay, so from Rioja, Spain, up on this mountain in the Finca Carbonera vineyard, which is the highest elevation that you can get to for vineyards in Spain. And this is where these grapes are grown. And then they take the grapes and they harvest them. So they're up there, they're a little bit closer to the sun, which is how they're able to grow better than in the lower parts of Spain. And they harvest the grapes and they immediately chill them. They immediately really, really cold so that the must.
They put on some like nice music, so maybe some bossa nova, some chill. Just like calm down.
Just get real chill.
Sit in like a nice beanbag chair.
I wish.
Actually, are you ever comfortable in a beanbag chair?
Maybe when you're like six.
Yeah, that's probably it. That envelops you.
So the unfermented grape juice, which is known as the must, sits and macerates and ferments for 24 hours in this cold maceration. And it sits for 15 days in stainless steel. And then it does another 3 to 6 months in stainless steel prior to doing its filtration and getting all of the like stems and skins and seeds and everything out of it. So it sits there and ferments for about 6 months in all of that,
wow.
All the stuff that's still in there. And I think that it really gives a lot of character to this wine.
Right.
So let's go ahead and smell it.
Okay.
Ooh.
Wow. Mm. Floral.
Yeah.
Fruity.
I like that we all had the same reaction. We all like, ooh.
And you know what? Crisp.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes, exactly. Let's go ahead.
Crisp.
And I love a good crisp white wine.
Ooh, wow. That's lovely.
And it has a lot of depth and flavor. It's not. It's literally like $15.
Okay. I'm going to go out and get that.
Yeah. You can get it at BTL Harlem.
Can I get, okay.
Which is just down the street.
Yeah, that new one, right?
Yeah.
That opened up is now.
Where I used to work.
I thought you worked on,
127.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the one now. You know, they made that one right around the corner.
I haven't been to yet.
Yeah, it's got to go. I wonder if they have this there.
Ooh.
Probably. El Coto also makes really great red wines as well. And again, it's coming from those same vineyards, those grapes that are being grown there. But they have like a special connection to the white wine.
Ooh. Are we going on a road trip right now to that wine store?
We're ready.
All right.
Take our mic.
And we're all
get going.
Bringing everything.
Okay. And this is so much, I feel like this totally represents you, in that you are always in style. Does not matter what season
oh,
it
geez.
Is.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. I was so glad that I was so happy that we weren't on camera with this. I don't have to be on camera. And if you looked at me right now, oh, my God. Anyway, thank you.
Always in style and always, like, on the cutting edge. It's like you... What's so funny about actors sometimes is you see in their long careers that they just kind of sit in what they do best. And mm-hmm. you are always changing and always pushing yourself to be the best that you can possibly be and not get lazy and not just rely on, oh, yeah, okay, I've been doing this for a while. Yeah. I can just, like, kick my leg and it'll be fine. Yeah. No, you're always going to class and making sure that you are at the top of your game all the
time.
Yeah,
that's called fear. Fear of being bad. Or people knowing that, oh, my God, she doesn't know what the heck she's doing. But it is, actually. It is kind of like, truthfully, that. You know, I have to be on my game.
Yeah.
I have to. Otherwise, I just feel like I can't do anything.
Right.
So, I mean, everybody knows they learn at a young age how their brain works and how they function best.
Yeah.
And I went, this is how I function best.
That's
so
great.
I have to do that.
Yeah. I also think it's a great lesson in the career and longevity of itself. It's like, it's still hustling. You're still working.
Oh, God, I know. I don't know if I like that, too. Yeah.
I have to say, though,
I mean, being an actor and a performer, you are constantly having to look at yourself. You can't actually, if you're going to stay in the business, get lazy. I don't think it's really possible.
Right.
Because even the best, you're still auditioning. You're still having to put yourself out there and reevaluate yourself. Yeah. Reevaluate yourself and keep growing to stay in there. So it's in that sense, it's good and also hard.
Yeah.
But it does keep you reinventing and learning about yourself and growing.
Right.
It forces you to.
Right. And always crisp. Always fresh.
Yes.
Just like the fresh flowers and pear and white peach that are in this wine.
Yeah, it is delicious. I mean, I'm going to go out and buy this.
Yeah.
It's so good. I like that the wine is like florally in the smell, but then it's fruity in the taste.
It's pretty complex.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's
just like you. Very complex. Okay, so I have a couple of questions to go through. So I have the luxury of knowing a little bit more about your career since you've talked about it through Triple Arts and things like that have been around. I want you to tell our audience about that first audition for Cats. You were right out of high school, right?
Yes, I was not even. I was 16.
Yeah.
My first audition for Cats when I was 16, and it was for the Broadway company. So before that, I had listened to the album over and over. It was in London, and it was talk about bringing it in, and I had, like, danced that, imagined what the ball was like a million times. So I was obsessed with it. And I was 16, and I went to a big open call. I went to an open call, and the guy who ran the audition was a guy who auditioned me years ago for A Chorus Line and remembered me. His name was Tom Reed. And so he did the exact same thing that he did for all the A Chorus Line auditions. You would have to stand in a line, do a double pirouette, a time step, and say your name. And then they would cut you from there. Like, that would be your... So, hi, I'm Charlotte Moore. Time step and double pirouette. I didn't know how to tap, but I... Sure, learned how to do time step.
Right.
So anyway, I remember
he did
master the time step. That, and I still can do that pretty well, but that's it. But and then that was and he remembered me from that time too, because I had auditioned for A Chorus Line and kind of got down to the end there. So that was what he did with hundreds and hundreds of people, and he would cut, and in those days you did everything in the theaters. All the auditions were in the theaters, not in studios.
Totally different.
So
from
we
today.
Were in, I forget what theater, we might have been in the Winter Garden where they did it eventually. Anyway, and then they cut, and Gillian Lynn came, and the choreographer, and cut, and it was several days of auditioning, and then finally it was five of us left for three spots, the Two Kittens and the White Cat, and there were four of us left, and they said, you called back. We were called back on Easter Sunday. I remember it was Easter Sunday, and I was just like grabbing my resume and my shoes and like, bye, Mom, bye, I got my audition for Cats at Easter Sunday. going there, and it was just the four of us, and then Cynthia and Rubia, who I don't know if you guys know, but she was a fantastic dancer, and I had seen her in a million things, right. And she walked in, and I went, damn, there's one down, so there's really only two spots here. I remember that, and then we all, like, had to do that. Do you remember in Cats, the developpe, okay. The white cat, we had to all by ourselves, and in those days, also, you sang in front of each other. Everybody sang in front of each other.
Oh.
It was so we all had to sing our songs, and then we all had to do the adagio, and then we did one other combination. And I did not get it. The other two kittens, and I didn't get cast as a kitten. So I was devastated, but also I was excited because I went, okay, I'll get the next one.
Yeah.
I'll get the national tour. So the national tour came, and then I eventually got it.
Yeah.
I got that, and it was my first real, I just never forget how excited I was. I just never forget. I was living at home when I was 18.
Right.
And I had worked so hard. Yeah. And I was auditioning since 14 for stuff. Getting cut, 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 cut. Stan, I just walk in, cut,
And
I kept at it, because I was so passionate about it, even though it was a lot of work. But anyway, I got there.
Oh, I love that story. And you met Terry doing Cats, right?
I met him in Cats, yes. They ended up bringing me to the Broadway company. I did the first national for about 9 months, and then they sent me to the Broadway company.
Yeah.
So they moved me, and that's when I met Terry, the
Tiger Cat.
Wait, what is that noise? Is that the phone? Can somebody turn that? Forget it. The phone's ringing. It's all right. Ignore it. Okay, good. So go ahead.
So you all have worked together on a few different shows, but you also help each other prepare for auditions and for roles and things like that. So what are some tips that you can give us about having a relationship with another artist?
I remember thinking, everyone always said, oh, you never should marry an actor, that whole thing. And I think that's what's definitely kept us together all these years, because we completely understand, like right now he's out of town doing something. He's doing this other job that he's going to be going out of town on, losing a lot of money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And like $50,000 he's going to have to lose to do this job, which is, it's just a regional theater job, but it's what he wants to do. It's his heart. And I'm like, do the job, I'm like, don't forget about the 50,000. Go do the, because I understand that.
Right.
Because I want him to say the same to me when I'm in that position.
Of course.
And also, I understand when he has to be out of town for a long time. Yeah. I think a lot of marriages wouldn't get that if they're not, it has to be reciprocated and understood with each other. And so that's, I think, why we've lasted so long. And also, long marriages, to me, you have to have something that you both understand and have in common and like to talk about or do. Like a lot of people that like to go hiking together or like to travel or later in life. It has to be something that...
Yeah.
And I was trying to think about that, because I don't know about my husband and I traveling together. I think we're not very good at that. I've decided that. I realized, we suck at that.
That's good to learn, though.
Boy, did we suck at that. But we have this thing where he has an audition. I want to work on it with him. I can go and see his performance, and we can talk about it, and we can work together, and I can give my idea. It's such a connection with art and directing and everything that keeps it together.
Definitely.
You said something about long marriages. Do you feel that it's also that feels like your career of constantly changing and constantly renewing, constantly working?
That resonates a lot. And again, I think with Broadway couples, as long as theater couples are in the business, it has its pluses and minuses. With some people, when you have that separation, it doesn't last.
Right.
But I think if you have a deep connection, even that separation, that also, you have to keep reinventing yourself.
Right.
You have to come back and deal with each other again new.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
So it does kind of make it not ever get stagnant.
Yeah,
and
of course.
It keeps it, you have to keep dealing with the problems because you're faced with them every day. You go away, you come back, and you're like, I don't even like you anymore.
Yeah.
So let's figure this out.
Right.
Let's figure this out. So you are subconsciously constantly working at it, where I think a lot of marriages get really stagnant.
Yeah.
Sort of. But that's just my side of it. You know, well, I don't know whether, you know, that's how I feel. At least that's kept us, yeah, I think, together.
That's great.
And then you hear tomorrow, Charlotte and Terry are getting divorced. They're getting divorced. Oh, shit.
And Candace and June did it.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about some of your lesser-known roles, because you are known for big shows. But one of my favorites is actually Chris in Carrie. And are you surprised, yes, to see this musical consistently popping up nowadays? Like, since the 2012 revival, I feel like I'm seeing it everywhere.
Yeah. It's a kind of crazy obsession people have had. And I do... for the longest time, I was surprised, because I would be doing Chicago on the road or doing whatever, and I'd walk outside to sign autographs, and there'd be, you know, 10 people there with Carrie, you know, program, sign. I'm like, what the heck, you know? This is 20 years later, and it surprised me. But now, actually, in retrospect, it doesn't surprise me, because the show was, it was so great and brilliant, and then also so not. I mean, yeah, that was, I understand why there was brilliance there, and there was something there to the core, which is why it's still, still lit somehow, you know? But that was a crazy experience to me, and I have to say it was a real great experience, because I learned that, you know, whether you're a hit or a failure, they're all great.
Yeah.
And when something was not a hit, I was okay about it. Like now, right, when I do something and I go, oh, it's going to go to Broadway, or it's not, or it's going to fail, it's not my fault. Do you know what,
right,
I mean? I'm there doing, and great, I have the experience, and move on. You know,
there's so many factors.
So I learned that, you know, yeah, people get so devastated, and I'm sort of, you move on to the next, and that's part of the way it is. That's the business.
Right. Well, and we were talking earlier about Chorus Line and Chicago, and how originally the original production of Chicago only lasted 2 years, and there are so many reasons why that happened. It had nothing to do with the actors. It had nothing to do with how people were doing their jobs. It was just, it wasn't the time for that show.
It wasn't the time.
And it wasn't
most important, I think.
And then it was reworked a little bit. And so the revival has been running for 20 years,
yes,
because of all these different factors, mm-hmm, but it's the same core show.
Absolutely. But that Chicago, to me, for two reasons why it didn't, was one, it was up against a Chorus Line.
Right.
Okay. And that just was the time.
It was the Hamilton,
right?
Right.
It was a reinventing, you know, reinvention of the musical and the whole, it was brilliant. And it was just so overcast.
Yeah.
Right? Number two, Chicago, people weren't ready to look at the world in a cynical way.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't ready to go be so cynical.
Right.
And then years later, when they revived it, people were ready. It was after the O.J. Simpson trial. People were ready for us to be cynical about our government and about our. So it's timing.
Yeah,
it was
definitely.
Timing.
Definitely timing.
I wish Bob Fosse were alive to know that.
I know. Well, speaking of Fosse, one of my favorite stories is the crazy Sweet Charity experience with Christina Applegate and The Replacement. And as somebody who I have come in and replaced with people breaking legs and ankles and all sorts of stuff. And it is nuts, but it will never be at the level of Charlotte replacing Christina Applegate. Can you please tell the story?
Well, I don't know. Was it that crazy? I can't even remember. All I know is that, you know, I was doing Chicago. The story is I was doing Chicago, and the producer of Chicago, I was doing Roxy in Chicago, and the producer came to me and said, listen, I'm bringing in Sweet Charity starring Christina Applegate, and I would love for you to understudy her, but I also want you to stay doing Roxy in Chicago. And so I was like, okay, wait, so I'm going to be doing both shows? Is that, you know, I mean, I could actually do a matinee of Chicago and do an evening show of Sweet Charity.
Oh.
And he said, but don't worry, she'll never be out. You know, that was the whole thing. I was like, okay, great. So, but it was a really hard, so I literally in rehearsals, I was doing 10 o'clock, I would be there at 10 o'clock in the morning rehearsing, and I would do shows at night. That was rough, I remember that. And I had two little babies.
Yeah, that was your babies.
Which would take precedence if, like, let's say you're supposed to go on for Chicago and then they
No, it doesn't. I did Chicago, but if they ever needed me over Sweet Charity, I would leave Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And then they
and do Sweet Charity.
Okay.
So actually, Sweet Charity took. I was always doing Chicago every night, eight shows a week.
Right.
But if Christina was out, I was on for Christina.
Oh, okay.
So crazy. And that actually did happen. I did do a matinee of Chicago. Went, grabbed my wig. They were like, "You're on," and I was on that night in Sweet Charity for Christina Applegate. And truthfully, and I never had any understudy rehearsals. I do remember that. For some reason, and I remember calling them saying, you know, it's been 6 months, and maybe I should rehearse this. And then finally I realized, I thought, you know, she's the lead of the show. I finally just let go of it all. I'm like, she's the lead. She can do whatever she wants.
She can walk wherever she wants
to. Yeah, you know what? If she doesn't remember the choreography, just do whatever. She's in the front. Whatever. And I just
so
only
good.
Let go of it, and I was like, fine. I don't know. It was a crazy time.
I love that.
But Christina broke her foot.
Yeah,
she ended up breaking her foot.
Her foot,
and I ended up not opening the show, but doing the first previews here in New York, which was crazy. I mean, there was tons of press on it and attention, and it was a crazy time. And it was, I don't know how the hell I did it. Honestly, I really don't. I don't know.
Plus, literally being a mom.
Yeah.
That's the other part of the story, is not only are you going to be on Broadway and be doing two shows and being brilliant, but you're also at home being a great mom to these two babies.
I know, my little babies. Well, thank God for my husband during that time, because I think I was, you know, it was kind of a little crazy time, and I think he wasn't. Luckily, we've mostly been one working on Broadway, one the other, kind of back and forth, and we've been lucky like that, except for Pippin. When Pippin came, then it was both of us.
Right.
And that was... I had a lot of babysitting jobs, including you, my dear.
Yes. I loved it.
A lot of nights of babysitting.
We would definitely get a call from both of you at, like, during different parts in the show, and so the kids would know, oh, are they doing Art of War right now?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Both of us, several times. I know.
It was
great.
So much fun. You receive offers to work and do shows all the time. What makes you say yes?
Okay.
To a project.
Well, first of all, let's clarify that. I do not get offers all the time to do work at all. I really don't. I have to go
and
audition.
The phone's ringing off the hook. That was a rock.
No, let me tell you, if they call and they ask me, I usually say yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen that often. And also now, you know, you don't want to go out of town when you have kids.
Yeah.
I mean, now that they're getting older, I've sort of thought, okay, because it was a time where I just sort of pulled myself out of the business and stuff. And now I'm sort of thinking, oh, maybe I'll go back. I can kind of feel like I can now.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite yet, though. Maybe another year or two. But we can't do tours. We can't. You're limited.
Right.
You're limited.
Right.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
And it also depends on what Terry's doing and what's this. And so that's sort of how that happens.
Yeah.
And mostly, you know, when they call me to go, I go back and forth in Chicago all the time.
Right.
And to me, at this point, your priorities change when you have children, and it's about making the money, and it's about being home.
Yeah.
So that show, it's great. I go in and out of it. I'm home. I make the money, and I can do it, you know, without much stress.
Yeah.
And
you know it pretty well by this
point. I know it this well. I know it so well. So that takes a priority. And so
of course.
As opposed to if I were young and didn't have children, I maybe wouldn't go. I'd say, I'm going to do this instead. I'm going to go out of town and make, you know, $1,000.
Right.
You know what I mean? to do this role. But you have to kind of, your priorities change.
Yeah, of course.
So.
Who is somebody that you're constantly following their career, and every time you see them, you're so impressed with what they're doing?
You mean of a Broadway star?
Yeah.
As far as an actress, Cate Blanchett.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, who doesn't want to be her?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Meryl Streep.
Oh,
but
my goodness! If they do like a Thor Ragnarok musical, you could absolutely play Hela. Oh my goodness, you'd be amazing.
Who's gonna get on that? Who's gonna get on writing that, Jimmy?
Yes, you done. I'll do the Marvel Universe musical.
He is ready.
I absolutely see it right now. Like, they do like a Cate Blanchett movie, I could absolutely see you like in her role.
Oh my gosh, well, that is a compliment. I absolutely adore her, but I adore her for who she is too, besides being such an actress and a beauty. But just the way she runs her life, the way she has children, the way she's filled her life, and she's a whole person.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
She's a whole person. Yeah. And as far as Broadway, I mean, they're all, I love them all. I mean, as far as the Broadway women, I'm trying to think. I mean, Rachel Bay Jones.
Yes.
I'm mad for her.
Right.
I mean, besides being my dear friend, she's a real true talent. I also have to say my friend Liz Larson.
Yes.
To me, and most of you may not know her because she's in Beautiful right now, but to me, she's like, till the day she dies, she's the first person I'd hire.
Yeah.
In everything.
Yeah.
She's brilliant.
In Beautiful, she's only in like a couple of scenes, but she steals the show every single time she's in
She just can do anything.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel she hasn't really had, you know, her time, but I feel like it's going to come for her. But those, you know, Rachel and her, obviously do anything.
Yeah.
But all of them are good. I mean, throw me names. I think they're amazing.
Seriously. Like, I'm right there with you. And I love Liz and Rachel. I mean, they're
just brilliant.
Wonderful women.
What about that guy, Terrence Mann? Is that, what do you think of, is he?
He's okay.
All right.
Such a hack.
You know, I see all his tricks. Yeah, he's amazing. Actually, he and Liz Larson just recently went to Connecticut Rep, where my husband is the artistic director, and in the summer, and did Sweeney Todd. Yeah. And I have to say, and I've seen every Sweeney. Mm-hmm. Theirs was the best. It was the best production. They were the best I've ever seen in both those roles. I mean, it was I couldn't. It took my breath away.
Wow.
Seriously, yeah.
Broadway 2020.
Yeah, that
we're
sounds
ready.
Like
yeah.
a dream. That sounds like a dream.
Yeah, right?
I wouldn't feel right if we didn't talk about Cora's Line.
Oh, sure.
What was the moment that you looked forward to every night that you were just
okay,
like,
first of all,
about doing?
I really didn't look forward to anything in that show.
Put me to work. You would think that by now I'm alive.
I look forward to the end.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
Singular sensation.
Like, soon I will
the end.
Get you.
I'm done.
Go
I'm going home.
Home.
Damn, that was hard. It was hard for me, that show.
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant show, and it is so personal.
Yes.
And that's why it was so hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just all of us. I mean, for me, it's to be on stage every night, begging for a job.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm in my 40s, plus everybody on that stage was in their 20s. So I was in leotard and tights with, I'm like 43, and they're like 20, half my age, and I'm on this line with them going, oh, my God, I want to kill myself. I want to kill myself. Anyway, but Cassie stands on that line for over an hour before she has to dance, and your body is starting to, and, you know.
Gets cold.
I have arthritis in every part of it, but you're just like getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And then the thought of, oh, my God, I got to do this.
Yeah.
But it was 8 shows a week. It was rough. And also just the idea of all my life I've heard, oh, yeah, when you do a show, you become that part. It takes over your life. And I used to think, no, it doesn't. You know, you do it and you walk home and you're that. You know, you separate.
There you go.
But I wasn't able to separate that. And I'd come home and I'd feel like, oh, it was hard. It was like I was auditioning every night.
Oh,
I was auditioning and not, even though she gets in at the end, but I don't know. It was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard for me. But I have to say, doing it for like 3 months, it's great.
Yeah.
It's cathartic.
Right.
After 3 months, it becomes real work.
Yeah.
Cassie role.
Physically,
not Sheila.
And emotionally.
Sheila?
Yeah.
Fun. You get to do all the jokes and you don't have to dance that hard.
Right.
And, you know, some of the other roles. But Cassie? No. So after 3 months, anybody that does that show more than 3 months, I think it's really hard for that role, Cassie. But the beginning, you're so living, you know what I mean? You did the part.
Yeah.
Which Jessica actually, I put together, can I tell the story?
Yeah.
I put together, in Western Carolina, I directed did the original choreography. Jessica played Maggie, nailed it.
Of course she
And
did.
I was counting on that note because she'd bring down the house at the ballet. And Ariana DeBose was playing Cassie, and we did the first run through, and the next night was opening, right? Mm-hmm. It was first run through, and you know, Ariana, someone stepped on her foot or something, and she sprained it, and so Jessica understudied it. So Jessica ended up having to go into that role, and we put Amanda, right?
Yep.
Who was doing what role?
She was
something else.
The dance captain.
She was the dance captain.
Yeah.
Amanda into your role.
Yeah.
So Jessica ended up playing Cassie the whole time. And she, and only because, perfect example, somebody who was in the back learning everything, and she was there to step up, and she stepped up, and it was amazing. So you and she ended up doing
Jessica,
Cassie.
You had your own sweet charity moment.
I did.
She did. She
She
did.
This is amazing.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
It was so
kind of crazy. That was
yeah.
a crazy time.
It
yeah.
was nuts. But it was really great. And that show, like working with Charlotte as a director, I feel like I am really lucky to have gotten so many opportunities to work with you as a director and as a choreographer. Thanks. Like even doing one of my favorite Charlotte experiences was doing Charleston.
Oh yeah. Yes, that's right.
Which is from Million Dollar Baby.
Yes.
Which is a show that no one does and not many people know
but
the choreography.
That Million Dollar Baby. No, I just saw Max Sennett is doing they're doing that at Encore.
Right.
Anyway, go on.
And it's one of these things in musical theater history that if we don't keep it alive, that it could be forgotten.
Yeah.
And Charlotte is so great about knowing what's going on, but also putting her take on it and her spin on it. And like, this needs to be highlighted because blah, 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 and knows the history and knows the people and coming to everything with such a knowledge.
That sounds familiar.
I wonder why I'm in the profession that I'm in.
I wonder why you and Charlotte are such good friends.
But that always meant so much in coming to everything with that director's eye.
Yeah.
Also, but also knowing the performer's experience.
Yeah.
And the actor's experience.
Thanks, hon.
Last question.
Yes.
So you've been doing Chicago since like 97.
Yeah, I think as long as it's been running.
Right.
Practically.
And you were talking about how a role kind of reflects life and things like that. And how has your changes as a person really affected Roxy and affected your portrayal of Roxy? Or is it, at this point, it's just
it has changed. It has changed only because I've been doing it for a 20-year period.
Yeah.
And the role... what role can you be in your 30s? I mean, I think I started in 31, 32 years old. I was 32. Now I'm 54.
Right.
So what role can you do? And I could do it till I'm 60.
Right.
Seriously. What role in musical theater can you be 30 and 60 and play the same role, right?
I want to see you 80. I want to see, like, you as, like, an Estelle Getty, just still, and I bet you will still, like, kick
those legs. You know what I mean? Like, I can't think of any.
No.
So because of that, you have to change, right? Because me doing it at 30 is very different than me doing it at 54.
Yeah.
So it's a knowledge. And the role was originally created for somebody in their 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So I was young at 30, and I remember that line. I never could get that line. I'm older than I ever intended to be.
Yeah.
Never could nail that line at 30. You know, it just never worked.
Right.
Now I can nail that line.
Yep.
My favorite line in the show. I'm older than I ever intended to be. Anyway, but, you know, absolutely. You grow. I grow with the role. You have to. You have to, you know, breathe and live it and bring who you are in the time. And it gets deeper and deeper now. I mean, I can do that show and not barely dance it, barely sing it, barely act it, but I know her so well. That it's the core is there.
Of course.
And with any show, that's what matters the most. That's why I always encourage musical theater people. It's all about the acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the acting. I mean, there are a lot of people that can sing and dance. There are a lot of people. And now even more.
Right.
My God, I can't believe the singers out there.
Yeah,
I mean, really, seriously, I never would have gotten a job now. I mean, the singers are unbelievable. But you know what? They're missing...
Yeah.
You know, not all of them, but it's very few that have that other thing, you know, and that and the acting, the what's behind in the scene, the person is the most important thing.
Right.
So it's anyway. That's what
I feel with that
role I finally have gotten. You know, whereas when I was 30, I was just kind of singing and dancing a lot.
Right.
Now I feel I don't have to sing and dance so much.
Yeah.
I don't have to go, look, I can sing. Look, I can dance.
Yeah.
Actually, it doesn't matter. Look, I'm playing the part.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that.
Now that we've got some wine in us, we're going to play games right now.
Okay. Good one.
Speaking of singing and dancing.
So speaking of singing and dancing.
We can sing and dance. We can do it.
We are going to do some rapid fire questions. So
ooh.
We're just going to go through them.
Okay.
And whatever comes to your mind first, that's the answer.
So just so you know, if this has to do with any musical theater trivia.
Nope, it does not.
Oh, good. Because
it's
I don't
like
know.
A...
Yeah, stream of consciousness kind of thing.
Yeah,
because I really don't know much. Did you ever see that video of me with Terry?
Oh,
and he knows all my songs, and I don't know one of his songs. Like,
ooh.
Even Stars. Oh, it's bad.
I'm is like, that
it's
on YouTube?
It's a Playbill video.
It's a Playbill video.
Go check it out.
Yes,
it's hilarious.
It makes you realize how really I have no clue. Even though I've been in musical theater all my life. Anyway, go ahead.
So funny. Okay.
Terry stuff. You're just like, whatever.
Well, I didn't know any of his songs. And he has the most iconic roles.
Right.
I mean, they're like it. I had not the iconic roles. He knew all my songs. I mean, including whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. I mean, everything. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, ready? Favorite audition song to sing?
I Love a Piano. But that's because that's what I sang. I mean, is
right.
it my audition song for me?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw answers
yeah.
out.
Here we go. It's Monday night. What are you watching on TV?
Nothing.
Great. If you weren't an actor or director, what would you be?
I would be a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
That's so boring, though, right?
I
don't have funny answers.
No, I love that.
You were supposed to be serious. Okay.
Yeah, be you.
Moment when you felt that you made it.
Cats.
Great. Yes.
Sorry.
That's all
first
I wanted.
Boom.
Yeah, that's all I wanted.
First album you ever bought?
Oh, it was Barbra Streisand's. I didn't buy it. My mother bought it. So, but yeah, I'll never forget it. And I forget it. It's beautiful. I think it was called Beautiful. She's
long
hair in the
and
front.
Then, yep. Yeah. I know exactly which picture you're talking about. Best advice you received?
Oh, well, there are many. But one of the best, which have stuck with me my whole life, is whenever you feel something that comes up, always use it. And so don't ever, even if you're set in your ways of how to act, if something comes up that's spontaneous and alive, let it come out no matter what. Even if you're crying, if you feel like laughing in that moment, let it come out.
Oh, I love that.
And it has taught me, I've used that my whole life.
Yeah.
It's been
like,
valuable. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
I didn't explain that very well.
No, but it also sounds kind of like life, too.
Yeah, it sounds like good life advice, too.
Yeah.
Yes. It's because those are the moments that are the realest on stage. And you don't want to stifle that.
Right. That's true.
You don't want to stifle it. You're living for those moments.
Yeah.
And you think you have to cut it because it's supposed to be this way. But actually, it enhances everything. Go ahead.
Craziest fan story.
This it right
was,
now.
It was my husband's. I don't know if I should tell this story, but somebody was really obsessed with him and they gave him $10,000 in cash.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And like, he walked home and she got, I have a present for you. And he came home and he opened it up and it was $10,000 in cash. He had told her that he needed money for something. I don't know. He was trying to do something. I don't know. And she gave him $10,000 in cash. And he thought it was Monopoly money. He was like, this is Monopoly money. This is not real because it looks so crazy to somebody have $10,000 in cash. It doesn't look real. Anyway, he ended up giving it back through us. Anyway, it was not good. It was a little weird.
That's crazy. Favorite perk of being on Broadway and worst pitfall of being on Broadway?
Favorite perk being on Broadway, that you get to have that, you know, free lunch at Sardi's in between shows.
Yes.
For like half price.
I love it.
I got a half price lunch.
Jimmy, you got to
get on Broadway. And my kids could come too. I could take you. We could all go.
Let's go.
But I wonder,
are we doing this
going to Sardi's
right now?
But I wonder if you have to be on Broadway, if I could go like.
I bet you could go.
I don't know. Okay, favorite perk. And also like having your caricature in Sardi's.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Oh.
What is my.
And then worst pitfall, like the worst thing about being on Broadway, the hardest thing.
Sometimes the worst pitfall. 8 shows a week sometimes.
Yeah.
It's hard. You know what it is? It's very difficult having children.
Yeah.
Because you do weekends. You work all weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were growing up, everything was like, oh, friends of the weekend, going to the park, parties, birthdays. You couldn't do any of that.
Right.
You couldn't do any of that in the night. So that's hard.
That's hard. Describe your best wine drinking experience.
I would say I would say Italy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's nothing like being in Italy.
Right.
Drinking wine, you know, with you know, fabulous food and bread and and butter, a lot of bread and butter.
Yes.
And cheese. A lot of bread and butter and cheese and wine.
Yeah.
Speaking our language.
And pasta.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that I, that would be it, just being in Italy drinking wine.
Last thing, what wine would you pair with Terry Mann? He answered the same question about you on his episode.
Well, I don't know that much about wine. I would say Montepulciano.
Yeah, Montepulciano.
Is that what he said with me?
Oh,
no, he didn't. The only reason why I say that is because on his 60th birthday, I rented a villa in Italy, and we all and it was in Montepulciano, and we all, my dearest friends, and we all went. And so it always sticks with us, that red, the red wine in that area. And so
and I think
why.
That he actually talked about that as being one of his favorite wine experiences.
Yeah, yeah, I bet. Yeah, so that's what came to mind, actually, immediately.
Definitely.
So what did he, you don't know what he paired?
I don't remember. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the
something
episode.
Something feisty. Something, something full of energy and annoying.
Ooh, this wine is very
full of
annoying.
Energy and annoying. Charlotte.
Front wine is very full of energy, but it's like at the back, the aftertaste is very annoying. I'm not enjoying this wine at the afterwards.
Oh, my gosh. Well, listeners, you can pick up the El Coto de Rioja, which we've been drinking today. We were drinking the 2017 vintage. You can pick that up at BKL Harlem, any other wine store. We'll most likely carry it. It's pretty well known.
Question for you. Have you ever, like, opened up a wine here and you know, tried to sell it and it not taste good?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thankfully not. I usually try to try the wines before we do the show, but there have been times where I have bought a couple bottles of wine and had to change last minute because I opened one up and was like, oh, no, this is not good. Or things that we've had that have opened up as the show goes. So when I first try it at the beginning of the show, it's really acidic and it just needs some time to breathe. And we'll get to the end of the show and try it again and say, oh, this is so much better than it first tasted.
Yeah. You do have to let, especially those red wines.
Yeah, right? they need to breathe.
She's introduced me to some like funky wines.
Like when Jimmy first tries it and he's like, nope.
When we first started, I was like, it's like very mossy and
wet.
Wet rock.
Wet rock.
Wet rock's my favorite. That's my favorite one.
I have had lots of people who have listened to the show or who have tried wines with me and have that same thing of like, I didn't get it when you first brought it over. I thought it was weird and disgusting. Mm-hmm. And now I look for those wines that are a little bit more handcrafted. Because I think that once you start drinking good wine, you start to get You taste sugar really easily in wine.
Yeah, I know. I agree. Yeah.
And I can't. Yeah. I can't do that anymore.
Oh yeah, she's ruined. She's ruined wine for me. You know, I was trying to find all these things, and I'm just like, nope, don't want that. Don't want that. That's bad. You know, I was like, can't I just like have a wine now?
Can I have like a $3 bottle of wine?
Yeah.
No.
Nope.
That's the answer.
You can't. Yeah. You can't do it.
But you can get a
You can get El Coto, for $15. It's great. Well, Charlotte, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
My
this
pleasure.
Is so much fun.
It was fun. You guys are so adorable. You really are.
We have a great time.
Yeah.
We do all right.
Bye, friends.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Sunshine. Oh, God. Lend a helping hand. We are.